Today we have a special guest joining us, Laura White, who's a writer for Walter Magazine. Welcome, Laura.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here.
Laura's going to read an article that she wrote. We'll begin with her reading her latest article from the July-August edition of Walter Magazine. Go ahead, Laura.
All right, this is Making Waves. Local radio broadcast caters to blind and print impaired. Tucked in the back corner of a row of townhouse-style offices just off Six Forks Road is Triangle Radio Reading Service. In contrast to the sun-baked parking lot out front and the row of cars whizzing past just beyond, it is cool and quiet inside, and the back half of the building overlooks a lush scene of verdant trees and ivy-choked bushes. The executive director, May Tran, greets visitors with a warm smile and a voice just above a whisper. Being soft-spoken is necessary, after all, when there's a live broadcast taking place just down the hall. For 35 years, TRRS has been connecting the blind and print impaired to the Raleigh community by delivering free local and national news and entertainment, as well as original content, via live broadcast and recorded audio. What began as an hour-long program in 1983 has grown to programming around the clock, with live readings taking place amidst scheduled shows and podcasts. On a recent afternoon, the metered and melodic voice of a woman reading from the live studio trickles faintly down the hall. The feed from the control room echoes her. This is the nonprofit's normal day-to-day scene. During three live shifts per weekday, plus one Saturday and Sunday, TRRS reads the News and Observer, IndieWeek, Cary Citizen, and other local papers, including those farther east, such as the Kinston Free Press. It also broadcasts readings of magazines like Our State, The New Yorker, Time, Smithsonian, and Vanity Fair. TRRS loans specialty-tuned subsidiary communications authorization receivers, or SCA radios, for picking up the station's signal, which is broadcast on a subchannel of WUNC. Most FM radio broadcasts are restricted to 15 kHz. The human ear generally hears between 20 Hz to 20 kHz. The most common frequency for SCA broadcasts is 67 kHz, which tends to have more clarity and less interference than the other frequency, which is 92 kHz. TRRS can also be found on Community Access Channel 22 in Raleigh, cable FM, and via web streaming. Or, if you own an Amazon Echo, you can simply say, "Alexa, play Triangle Radio Reading Service." With a small staff of six people, only one of whom is full-time, and more than 150 volunteers, it's no secret the driving force behind TRRS's long-term success, that critical mass of 150. "It's kind of like a family here," Tran says. "We have volunteers who have been reading with us for over 25 years. We have volunteers who come in, people who love to read, and that's one way to give back to the blind and print-impaired community. Volunteers are the lifeblood of TRRS, and those who join the team tend to stick around." One volunteer, Bob Kruger, is 95 years old and has been with TRRS for 30 years. Tran gestures to a wall full of calendars laid out in a three-month spread with handwritten names of volunteers penciled in for their reading times. Bright orange stickers pepper the pages, each one denoting that a program will need a substitute reader that day. This means volunteers who have been trained and waiting for their chance on air might finally get an opportunity. TRRS's development production and volunteer associate, Shay Hargett Hill, worked as a volunteer from 2012 to 2014 before moving to Florida briefly. She missed the station so much that she came back. She's been a part-time employee since 2016. Tran herself has been on staff 18 years. "They can't get rid of me," she laughs. While volunteers might be the driving force behind TRRS, diverse programming is what drives Tran. She wants to ensure that TRRS's offerings encompass the wide range of its audience demographic, from local and national magazines to children's story time to poetry and science fiction. In 2015, TRRS was honored for its non-reading entertainment by the International Association of Audio Information Services for Symphony Notes, a program reading the NC Symphony program notes for the season's performances. There's also a reading of the Spanish-language newspaper, Que Pasa Noticias, every Saturday, which is one of the most popular broadcasts. TRRS supplements with outside programming to suit audience interest, such as an exercise program based out of Arizona. It's another one of the most popular programs. From the outside, you think, oh, this is a reading service, Tran says, until you come in here. We do so much more. TRRS collaborates with the North Carolina Library for the Blind, the Governor Moorhead School, and the North Carolina Department of Social Services for the Blind. Thanks to volunteers, the station even has a system to translate the program guide and the schedule into Braille for those who request it. Tran says, one of our volunteers purchased a Braille paper, and we keep it at the Governor Moorhead School. That Governor Moorhead School connection has also spurred the TRRS program called T3, short for Teens, Tools, Talent, which teaches blind students how to operate the audio equipment for course credit. One of the youngest volunteers, at 21, was actually a graduate of this program and continued to work the soundboard until he got a full-time job. On the other end of the audience, TRRS works with senior living facilities to rent out the SCA radios. For a minimal one-time fee, these places can stream our radio station live to all their residents, says Janet Shanzenbach, Director of Community Relations. Residents can listen to us 24/7. Fundraising is what fuels these possibilities. With no funding from the state or federal government, most TRRS funding comes from private donors, corporations, and individuals. This year, one of the fundraising priorities is to replace the 18-year-old studio equipment. The TRRS audio system failed last December, so the organization hopes to raise $30,000 by October to replace and upgrade the technology. Until then, dedicated volunteers stepped up, creating a temporary solution so the show can go on. That dedication is what seems to create the family Tran is so proud of. She can name the volunteers off the top of her head, along with how they came to join TRRS, their roles and programs, and the amount of time they've been on board. When I came here, everybody was young, but you grow old together.
Thank you so much, Laura. We appreciate your stopping by.
It was such a pleasure writing this article, and I have had a wonderful time reading with you today. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome. And continuing in the artist in studio, consider the Shucker, a hand-forged business spans the region by Addie Ladner. It's like a cooking show in here, says sculptor and blacksmith Mike Waller. He's meticulously inserting and removing a small slab of carbon steel in and out of a 2200-degree forge in his cinder block studio, which was once an old country store. His studio sits behind the idyllic Hillsborough farmhouse he shares with his wife Leah, two young children, Neva 5 and Herbert 4, their dog, and a few chickens. The piece of carbon steel will soon transform into a handcrafted oyster knife that blends art and functionality, a Carolina Shucker. He moves quickly and steadily, shaping and pounding the now neon orange rod again and again to make the oyster knife's blade, then its handle. Waller can make more than 100 of these oyster knives in just over a day and a half, and he does it seemingly effortlessly. The oyster knife he's making on this particular day started out as a basic slab of steel, but old, rusty North Carolina railroad spikes are what he most prefers to use. Railroad spikes, he says, have a sense of place and give each knife character. The older the better. Then they're all different and come with history and a story, he says. Those story-imbued historic railroad spikes, plus carbon steel and the occasional horseshoe, have come to hold high value to Waller and his lifelong friend Kirk Davis. The two grew up together in Kinston, North Carolina, and both received fine Bachelor of Fine Arts degrees in sculpture from East Carolina University. Now the friends together have carved a niche locally and countrywide for their artisan oyster knives, Carolina Shuckers. The Shuckers pay homage to their Eastern North Carolina upbringing, they say, and are a tribute to the rich history and traditions of the state's coastal culture. Davis, who lives and runs his own studio, Artforms, in Moorhead City, specializes in metal, iron, and woodworking. Waller runs Waller Fushi Studios with his wife, Leah. His work can be seen in public spaces all over the Triangle, most notably the iconic larger-than-life 2,000-pound bronze bull in downtown Durham, Major. Waller and then-girlfriend Leah made the bull together over the course of 13 months while working for a metal shop in Durham. "We had never done anything like that in our life, ever," he says of the project. In 2009, Davis, Waller, and a few other friends found themselves at an oyster roast, but short on oyster knives. "We thought it was crazy that we were metal workers, and no one had oyster knives," says Waller. So after the roast, Waller and Davis each went back to their own shops to take a stab at making a few knives for the next roast. Their creations were a hit. Friends at the next oyster roast wanted the knives for themselves, their friends, friends of friends, and so on. "It was all very grassroots," Davis says. "At the time, no one was making oyster knives, and we didn't know what a hand-forged oyster knife should look like. But we started selling them quickly. Calls kept coming in, and we knew we were onto something." The duo's whim of a project quickly turned into a thriving side business, including special commissions from the likes of acclaimed chef Vivian Howard's Kinston restaurant, The Boiler Room, and Kiowa Island Golf Resort, a luxury getaway in South Carolina. Each shucker was vastly different than the others, but the originality and quality appealed to customers. "We take all this metal and we're repurposing wrought-ironed handrails. We'd make a smaller knife, then a larger one, and we'd add twists to the handles," Davis says of the early experimentation process. Eventually, thanks to feedback from their friends, the two settled into 8 different knife designs. This preserves originality by offering choices, but has helped them streamline their design process also. "We wanted a complete set," Waller says. "Plus, everyone shucks an oyster differently. Some folks start at the hinge," he says, "others at the mouth. Some hold their fingers up close to the blade of the oyster knife, while others the handle." The streamlining has paid off. Now, Davis and Waller make between 5,000 and 10,000 knives a year, sold in more than 20 shops around the country, as well as the Carolina Shuckers online shop. The knives are all made from salvaged railroad spikes, carbon steel, and horseshoes. While they've simplified the design process, they've not sacrificed the attention to detail. Each shucker is individually made by one of the two artists, divvied up between their two studios. Waller makes the Mama's Boy, Old Big Boy, the Queen Anne, and the Little Big Boy in Hillsboro, about an hour northwest of Raleigh. The Mother Shucker, the Shuggy Shucker, the Half Peck, and the Cluster Shucker are Davis's handicraft in Morehead City. "We continue to sell, even when it's not oyster season," Davis says. A Carolina Shucker has heft. Each weighs around 1 pound, which is significantly heavier and sturdier than the typical white plastic-handled Dexter Russell oyster knife. "We wanted to make oyster knives like they used to use long ago, like your grandfather would have been using, and share some of our southern culture and history," says Waller. Waller says after he and Davis stumbled into making the knives for that first casual roast, they discovered this heritage of oyster knives from people on the coast. There, knives' appearance vary by place and come with their own stories. Down east, they have knives made of all kinds of things, like paint scrapers, screwdrivers, files and bolts, anything that was hard steel, Waller says. The notion of family handmade heirloom oyster knives resonated, but since we're artists, we also wanted to make something new and original and funky. Some of the originality can be found in the knives' names. The Queen Anne knife was inspired by Queen Anne's Revenge and mimics a sailboat. Its look is feminine, long, and lean. The mother shucker is the mother of all oyster knives, Waller says, and the largest in the collection. The cluster shucker, a sleek, simple knife, looks very similar to the railroad spike from which it's made. The shuggy shucker is named after the common southern greeting, "Hey, Shug." Several styles have a twisted handle to mimic a wave in the ocean, while other handles resemble crocodile skin. And since, according to Davis, an oyster roast and drinking beer go hand in hand, they eventually decided to add a bottle opener to many of the styles. As for how Waller himself shucks the salty, slippery bivalve, "Wiggle, wiggle, twist. Go for the hinge," he says. And while the sale of Carolina shuckers across the country has allowed the friends to try oysters from British Columbia to Portland, Oregon to San Francisco, Waller's preference remains Stump Creek or Taylor's Creek from here in North Carolina. "Wild is better," he says, and he has just the tool to match them. And from the Our Table department, family tradition, reliable Polish and German flavors at J. Betsky's. Also by our friend Laura White. Family can look like a lot of things. For John F. Korzykwinski, kin, colleagues, and community all comprise an important portion of that definition. The owner and chef at J. Betsky's restaurant spins family recipes for Eastern European dishes into modern takes made with local ingredients. Originally from Merrick, New York, both of his great-grandparents were German, and both of his great-grandfathers were Polish. "I grew up in a family where my grandmothers particularly cooked a lot," he says. "I just felt the need to bring a little bit of that to the public." Today he does so in Seaboard Station, where Raleighites can feast on kielbasa sausage, the family recipe from an uncle who was a butcher, right alongside seafood dishes featuring seasonal local produce. When Korzykwinski first opened his restaurant more than a decade ago, countless friends and colleagues warned him against using the terms German or Polish to describe his dishes, concerned it might scare people away with visions of bland cheese and potato-heavy offerings. He's found the opposite to be true, however. Many of his customers are devoted regulars. Fortunately, people have continued to come and help it grow. It shatters the stereotype. Good, hearty food, as it turns out, is just good, hearty food. No stranger to service, Korzykwinski has always worked in restaurants, both in front and back of house, from Italian joints in the Bronx to ritzy seafood houses along the south shore of Long Island. "I think that's how a lot of people start out up in New York," Korzykwinski says. "So you get a little taste of it all. All the people, you know, I always enjoyed the people. I enjoyed the camaraderie." That camaraderie is what draws people to service, Korzykwinski says, and he suspects it's part of what keeps them in it. "You know you're a glutton for punishment to a degree if you enjoy doing this," he says, meaning the restaurant industry. "It's an adrenaline rush." It was kin that first brought him to Raleigh 25 years ago. His sisters were in school here, so he moved down. His first job was at Capital City Club. He worked in a number of other establishments over the years and would later go on to help Andrea Rusing with the opening of Lantern. He credits much of his success to the many opportunities offered to him by the area's other talented chefs and restaurateurs, and all the things he learned while working with them. It was the camaraderie that kept him here. Korzykwinski is bolstered by the Triangle's food community. Here, he says, support supersedes competition between establishments. He cites 18 Seaboard executive chef Jason Smith as an example. Smith was an early tenant at the Seaboard Station Shopping Center, where Jay Betsky's has always been located since the restaurant's opening. The success and stability of Smith's Seafood Restaurant encouraged Korzekwinski, he says, and he wasn't alone. Now, Seaboard Station is a diverse culinary scene, ranging from American, European, and Chinese fare to coffee and beer. Korzekwinski has fostered a familial relationship with his staff, teaching in the way he was taught. The restaurant employs about 16 employees, both full and part-time, and several of them have been with him since opening. According to Korzekwinski, you can't put a price on the continuity of a long-term staff. That's the reason we've been here 11 years. People are a lot smarter than me, and it makes me look good and it keeps me going, he says. Our men and women are really good people. They get the whole picture. Korzekwinski knows his family members are the ones who have sacrificed the most for Jay Betsky's success. He gives credit to his wife, Catherine, for most of the family legwork while he's at the restaurant. The Korzekwinskis integrate home and restaurant as much as possible. Catherine Korzekwinski's and 2-year-old Rose can be found at Jay Betsky's most mornings for a cup of coffee and some quality time before the day gets rolling. The name itself is a mashup of family names. Jay, for Korzekwinski's grandfather John, who he's named after. Bet, for his grandmother Elizabeth, who friends called Betty. And Ski, to wrap it all up in Korzekwinski style. And Korzekwinski is already planning where his children will fit into the restaurant one day. His oldest daughter Eve, 10, loves baking. His son Harrison, at 6, is outgoing and likely would be front of the house. Perhaps Rose will fill his shoes as chef. Korzekwinski also plans for a bit of renovation, modernization, and possibly expansion at Jay Betsky's. The restaurant's interior is intimate, homey, and inviting, with dark woodwork offset by black accents and neutral tones. The seating is almost doubled by the outdoor dining area, where tables are framed by planters bursting with greenery and seasonal blooms. It's all cozy and classic, but has remained unchanged since Jay Betsky's start. So, too, has Korzekwinski's involvement, and he's coaxing himself to step back from some parts of daily operation. After all, it's what his close-knit staff is for. Jay Betsky's is practically part of his family, though, and so he knows this will be easier said than done. Something you've worked, grown with your own hands, and sacrificed a lot for, you don't want to let go of it. Maybe I'm a little bit worse that way, but I try. This article was edited for Time. And from our town, Shop Local, there's a hidden gem at Six Forks Station, tucked between Home Depot and Supercuts. Zest Cafe and Home Art packs a lot of punch into its retail space with colorful, sometimes cheeky cocktail napkins and picture frames and glassware, elegant serving platters, luxe candles, clever children's gifts. At the checkout register, you might be tempted by the homemade cookies and brownies for sale. There's an adjoining cafe. We're pretty much a 50-50 spot, says co-owner Ben Swirsky. Swirsky's parents founded Zest in 1993, and he and his wife Amanda Swirsky took over 5 years ago. Together, the couple have evolved the space to match its surrounding North Raleigh community, emphasizing sophisticated gifts and farm-to-table fare. The cafe did away with breakfast service in favor of Sunday brunch, as well as lunch and dinner daily, and often hosts wine and beer dinners. The Swirskys say the best thing about working together is the community they found at and through Zest. We love being the place in North Raleigh where people come in several times a week, Ben Swirsky says. And it's just as fun when a first-time visitor is pleasantly surprised. Zest is located at 8831 Six Forks Road, or visit zestcafehomeart.com for more information. And now in the Raleigh Spotlight. Re-educate yourself with Ms. Lauren Hill at Red Hat Amphitheater, July 26th. The Grammy Award-winning singer, songwriter, rapper, and producer is celebrating the 20th anniversary of her album, The Miseducation of Lauren Hill. Over the intervening years, Ms. Hill has largely stayed out of the public eye, so this show is a rare opportunity to see the groundbreaking artist. A portion of ticket sales go to the singer's MLH Fund, which supports education, health, and development initiatives in the African American community. Get schooled. Everything is everything. The show's July 26th at 6:30 p.m. Tickets range from $33 to $200, and it's at 500 South McDowell Street, or visit redhatamphitheater.com for more information. In the Triangle Now spotlight, summer's officially here. Should you find yourself with extra time on your hands, have a desire to give back, or want to expose your school-age children to the needs of others, there are several opportunities in the Triangle. One example is you can empower women to achieve economic independence by providing a network of support, professional attire, and development tools with Dress for Success Triangle NC. Roles include serving as a career image coach or helping with boutique clothing sale. Visit dfstrianglenc.org/volunteer, or you can visit activategood.org for more information. Also in the Triangle Now spotlight, it will be Muy Caliente at Knightdale Station, August 19, when the community hosts Taco Palooza. What is Taco Palooza? It's a Fiesta del Taco. The party starts with 15 food trucks serving up nothing but tacos and cold cerveza to wash it down. More fun is cooked up with a best salsa contest and a taco eating contest. Merengue and cha-cha the night away to La Orquestra Tropico. The Mango Dynamic Dance Company from Morrisville will also perform and give free Latin dance lessons. Los Niños can jump for joy in the bouncy house and take part in a piñata bust. It's tasty fun for the entire family. 12 noon to 4 p.m. the event is free, and that's August 19th at 810 North 1st Avenue in Knightdale. That brings us to the end of today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.